So welcome to Monique Lawner. This is a interview for the upcoming publication by Singing Dragon Press of Yoga Radicals, Inspiring Stories from Pioneers in the Field. So it's really nice to see you today, Mo. And what I like to do before we launch is just to get in to sacred space together. So however that feels right for you. I'm here in Albany. We have a cold, windy spring day, and I'm watching you enjoy that warm sun. So letting yourself just ground. Relaxing and releasing into this moment of time. Inviting in any guides and angels, helpers, wisdom keepers that you might share today. And then as we land together, Mo, this is about embodying your experience so that as you speak, as you listen in, that we can actually sense into your path as a yoga pioneer, as a yoga radical. And to have that be the space from which your responses arise from. So letting go of whatever else is no longer serving. And just continuing to release. Coming into your own personal garden of experience, sacred and whole. And then let's just take three deep inhales and exhales just to feel again into it all. Yeah. And then thank you. If there's anything that you'd like to add just to round out our circle here for the moment, what shows up?
I just want to say I'm so grateful to have this connection at a time of disconnection, really. And to be included in this group of people who are really luminaries, I feel deeply honored. And as always, just surprised and delighted by the way the universe moves through us.
Yeah. I'll share a little personal. I just published my first book, and it's exactly what you just said.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Around this wayfinding, right? So this is the theme. This is the big theme, right, Mo?
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
The questions are shaped in the form of a star, Mo, that come out of the Presencing Institute's prototyping process. So just to give you that framework as we begin, Presencing Institute, if you recall, is this awareness-based change-making organization that I've been very involved with for over a decade. And those 5 points of the star that the questions are designed from relate to listening to the universe as the helpful place, so that we might actually crystallize our intention and vision as a core quality of a self, and then to reach out to involve others, that core team, and then to find a landing space, a platform, a launch pad, so that we can try and try again. So that's kind of our little carousel ride this afternoon, so that you might witness again, probably know now more deeply. It's no surprise that we're talking here now. So thinking back, feeling back, sensing back in on this initiation that you had into your yoga universe, into the universe that chose you, and to imagine it as an invocation of something else in you personally. The question is, can you please tell us how your inspiration arose and what you thought, felt, and sensed about it? And if you can, do you know where it came from?
What a great question. You know, we often in trainings ask people, that's our first question of them, or second, tell us your name, where you're from, and how did you find yoga? And for me, it was sort of a mundane, you know, very commonplace issue, right? That I was unhappy in my life and really unhappy in my relationship. And my best friend said to me, hey, you know, this yoga studio, which was a yoga zone, just opened down at the end of the complex. You want to go take a class? And I was like, sure, can we go out and have a drink after? You know, like just pretty unconscious. And I went, and just, it was like kismet, you know, it was like, I just could not stop going to yoga. And I wasn't looking for enlightenment. I didn't even know that yoga could give me peace and spiritual connection and a different community. All I knew was, you know, my friend asked me to go. I wanted to make her happy. I went. And it all was born from there. It was just, it was magic. So I had no, it's like, when was I aware that something larger was happening? Probably not till really recently, which is sort of funny. You know, and if I look at my path in yoga, I started spending so much money on yoga classes that when the studio held a teacher training, I thought, well, I'll be a teacher and then I won't have to pay for yoga classes. And I became a teacher and then ended up at a yoga retreat and met my husband, Steve, as you know him, you can hear him in the background sometimes. I met him through yoga and ended up in California through yoga and found Soul of Yoga because I was looking for a job. So I feel like it's all been very real life. Like I just wanted to go with a friend, and then I wanted to go on a vacation, and then I wanted a job, and each one of these very real life, like nothing metaphysical necessarily. I wasn't looking for enlightenment. And when I found Soul of Yoga, Tom and Trisha Kelly, who were the founders of Soul of Yoga, they were such deeply spiritual teachers. And I had never experienced yoga in that way before. And that took me down a whole other path of yoga as a spiritual journey. And it was just one thing after the next, just, you know, can I take this spiritual aspect of yoga and marry it to the more scientific aspects of yoga that I had been studying in New York, where I'm from? Like Leslie Kaminoff was one of my first teachers, Brian Dorfman, one of my first teachers. And they're very anatomical, physiological, which is frankly profound on a level. The effects that yoga practice have on us, on this body, the anamaya kosha, And then when I found the effects on the other koshas, it blew me away. And so I started thinking, well, everyone should have this experience of both things. And I don't know if I'm answering your question, but it was all just very logical. And then at some point after a training session, I kind of sat back and I thought, wow, look at where the universe took me from one place where I was unhappy. And on the ocean of yoga, moved me to a place where I'm joyfully happy, but also able to contribute to so many people's lives, which was not my initial intention, in training teachers to really have this both aspects of yoga, how it can help us spiritually, physically, mentally, and in training teachers and now yoga therapists to see them work with people and the full extent that that has, as you were saying, you know, this idea of a star, how it radiates outward, and how the teachers that we train then go and train other teachers and help more people. And when I think of it like that, it's almost more than my little mind can hold of the extent that this can reach.
Thank you. So I'll be practicing my generative listening practice that also comes out of the Presencing Institute. And from time to time, I will get an image that will prompt another question. So I just wanted to let you know that.
Okay.
And what I'm actually sensing, Mo, not seeing, is the way in which the connection, which is part of the next question, arises in you. So remember, this is a book that will be lifting up narratives around leadership development. So the ways in which we move from me to we is about learning how to access something that's still in potential, not yet manifested. And so I'm listening into the way in which you listen to your friend and, you know, all of the other weavings. So I'm curious if you could say a little bit more and use whatever yogic inspiration from your knowledge base and your experience base of how these rather, I want to call them ineffable, hard to see, hard to feel in others, the connections that you've made in yourself that then become actionable, things that allow you to move toward doing something. So just take a moment to sense in.
Can you frame that question in another way?
So what I heard you referring to your way of knowing as one that originates from a real body knowing, and that you made some choices not by thinking about something or even responding to a feeling in the future. Remember, we're all talking about the future here, but that something was pulling you forward that you might not even know in your mind yet. So this question relates to how did you make connections from those early experiences and opportunities that you had in yoga to begin to move it towards something that became more of a vocation or more of a career? The way you landed, for instance, in a more effective leadership place out there in Soul of Yoga. Another way of thinking about it would be, what's your inside-outside learning process? How did it actually arise so clearly that you would actually do something with it? I think you froze.
Funny, I was just talking to my business partner, Ryan, about this. Can you still see me?
I can hear you, yeah.
Good. Okay. I was talking to my business partner, Ryan, about this and how when we had to close this physical studio and went online, that we just kind of did it, you know? And I can't tell you at a point where it became, it's hard to say, I don't think of it as I recognized that there was a plan forming and then I coordinated with the universe from that point of view. I think I get the inspiration and at the same time do it. Like, I remember being at lunch with Nisjala Joy Devi and her saying to me, this was when we had a 300-hour training program, and she said to me, oh, I hear that International Association of Yoga Therapists is about to launch this idea for an accredited yoga therapy training. It's 1,000 hours. And in that moment, I said, I'm going to do that. You know, it wasn't a thought process. I didn't think about it. It just became a drive to do it. And in some ways, that can be a little bit of a difficulty of my personality is I don't think things through always before I do them. But if I go with them, the universe guides me in making them just exactly what they need to be. And I'm always surprised at the way a training program goes, and it is absolutely deliciously perfect. Everyone who showed up was exactly who needed to show up. The people who canceled last minute needed to cancel the last minute. And in order to create that perfect incubator of personalities that aren't just sitting there learning, but that are interacting and supporting each other's growth, so that we all rise together. And there's process that goes behind it. Yes, you have to fill out all the boxes and the forms and make sure you meet the accreditation standards and you get the payment schedules done and all of that happens. You build your website, you know, have your handouts, but that's not what drives me. What drives me is simply an idea comes and something in me just, there's no question that that is the right thing to do. They don't question it at all. Okay. Does that answer you?
This is about sensing. So We want to remember that these spontaneous confluences of thinking, feeling, and sensing, right? That all of the wisdom traditions, yoga being just one of them, are being lifted up through our lived experience today on the planet. So these questions are meant to invite a new weaving of understanding through your story so that people can also begin to feel that confidence to take action even when it's something so different. That's the whole concept of the radical, of the innovator. So you're beautifully, it's almost like singing rather than saying what you're doing. And so we know that from Sanskrit. So this question then around the doing it and the knowledge that we all have that we can't do it alone. Please tell us, Mo, how does it work for you when that inspiration lands in an idea that will end up taking action with you? How do you influence others to join you? How does that core team come to be? How do you stretch that trust and faith, if we talk about it, of your embodied knowledge that helps people land in the same direction as you? How does that work?
I think that when we, or at least when I, have a real enthusiasm around doing something, when I feel it, I think it's Rumi who says it's something that moves in your soul. When people sense that in you and you're talking to them about something, they sense it. They want to be a part of it. They also know what's right. Because we're speaking to each other on another level besides verbally, that people understand, like, oh yeah, you know, I feel what you're saying. I get it. It's right. It's time for this. And I want to do that. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I just want to make sure the readers know that originally when you said it lands as something that's the right next thing to do, you placed your hand just above your heart center on your body. So I just want to make sure that we get that in the transcription. Mm-hmm. And just now, as you were kind of doing that wondering, the hand went behind to the top of the spine. And so it makes me wonder, as you learn these leadership stepwise practices that become your own, right? Your unique brand, your emerging, whatever we want to call it. Say a little bit more about some of those challenges that you face when you're very certain, but others aren't yet certain. What is it that you've learned that might help your readers who are also new to trusting this other way of knowing?
Yeah, I would say that if there's a challenge that I faced, it's that it's the people who say, well, that won't work. That will never work. People aren't going to want to come, or, you know, that's not financially sustainable, or, you know, all the myriad of things that people say. And I would say that if you have something that is a thought for you and it feels so strong, and there's not even a question in your mind, if you know it's right, you know it's right. Don't listen to other people. Their fear can become your fear if you let it, and don't let it. You know, who are other people to tell you that something that hasn't been done before can't work?
Great, thank you.
I'm like kind of bossy. So I'm an oldest child too. So I also, you know, I'm sort of used to being like, I don't care what you say. It's gonna work.
Yeah. Okay. So when you anchor yourself, and I'm watching you kind of move around comfortably, knowing that other people might not be comfortable as you move around comfortably with that clarity, it occurs in this practice and process using this sensing model and then connecting to source, really is what I hear you pretty reliably connected to. And there's this space of the in-between. You know, in yoga, we often talk about it at the top of the breath or at the exhale and the holding. Those are those less well-formed places, let's just say, for the sake of this conversation. And yet they're places of holding energy where something is enabled to come into better view, to better form, making space for what isn't serving to be released. Those are the old esoteric sensory-based physiological things that happen in the physical body. I'm wondering if, for the sake of the readers, knowing that you have a strong, stable certainty at that level of your self-knowing, is there a set of sutras or practices that continue to allow you to widen that sense of confidence and certainty that's happened over time that might help people learn more about your particularities?
Yes. In the Yoga Sutras, tapas Ishvari Pranadana Svadhyaya. I think that's 2-6. That is what informs me when I get stuck. And, you know, I tend to be a very tapas person, right? I'm going to change the things that I have the courage to change as it relates to the serenity prayer. I think where I have less ability is in the Ishvara Pranadana. That is where I am constantly learning. And also in the times that I've really tried to push something through and been really upset about it, you know, someone on my team wasn't doing what I wanted them to do, or someone who was a supervisor was telling me no, you can't do that, or something just doesn't work out, those are also messages from the universe. So I want to say, like, yes, I'm confident, and yes, I just move forward. And so because I can tend to bulldoze other people that way, the universe is the thing that often stops me. And and to practice that sense of trusting surrender and trusting the natural flow of things just as much as trusting my own ability to get something done is really powerful for me. And how do I know the difference, right? Where is the wisdom to know the difference? It's in the svadhyaya, right? It's in the self-study. So if I get really busy and I forget to do my practice, I lose touch with that. And then I start pushing where I should surrender or giving up where I should move forward. And the whole balance gets thrown out. Mm-hmm. But as long as I can continue to come back to, how do I know the difference? Well, I know the difference because I know me and I know my relation to the universe. And if I can really sense into that relationship, then it all becomes very clear. And other people's voices do not represent the voice of the universe. I think that's also an answer to your previous question, that if you're so sure, you just, you know, you've felt this, it's so true for you that you need to go do this. Mm-hmm. And every time you sit down to meditate or every time you find your practice, that comes through so strongly. Don't listen to other people's voices as strongly as you would listen to that voice of the universe, because that's the real one. And that comes through the practice. It's guided. It's inherent in all of us. We all have that inner, you know, that inner connection, the inner Zoom call, now we might say, to the higher power. So that really is the sutra that I try to live by.
Thank you. So as this quality, what I would feel into here is a sense of boundarylessness with you and the universe when you're in your most aligned place. That this question of moving from a me to we place actually is supported by that relationship that you have with that universal energy, life force, however we want to put language to it. And if it's true that that didn't happen overnight relative to your leadership practices, you might have had them, you know, with your individual awakening and awareness practices. How does it work as things got larger, more expanded, and more complex for you? Tell a little bit more about that pushback when things start to scale up.
No, I think that if we are in touch with that place, that if you are really doing something that's truly good for you, not in a selfish way, like, well, you know, I'm going to make all this money and it doesn't matter how other people are treated. I mean, that's not something that could ever come from a connection to a higher power. What I found is if I am really connected to what's right for me, it automatically is connected to what is right for we. It can't be any other way. Mm-hmm. You know, we hear that all the time and you know, self-care is care for everybody. And in a very real way, that is true. And we see this now in the world, right? That, if we take care of ourselves and we stay healthy, we have a much greater chance of remaining healthy. And when we're not really ill, we have less of a chance of making other people ill. I mean, I'm sort of taking it from a little bit different standpoint, but our health matters to other people's health. And the planet's health matters to our health, and our health matters to the planet. So if I'm doing what's healthy for me, which is eating sustainable organic food, that's automatically better for the planet. Great. So I don't know if I see a separation
between what is right for me truly at that soul level and what is right for the world.
Thank you, Mo. So let's just rest in that beautiful rendition of your experience as being connected to all and everything. And if it's true that at the level of detail that you're experiencing your life during this time, that breathing in and breathing out of your awareness, and we know this, right, totally impacts the situations and people surrounding you, regardless of whatever interference your mental, emotional body might have in the moment. This quality of heart and mind working together so that our bodies actually learn to follow, right? The tapas, the discipline. And this releasing, you spoke indirectly about this global releasing that's going on and the personal releasing that you did through your tapas practice and then the landing in this acknowledgement, I guess I'd call it. The Sufis like to tell the story about remaining standing in front of the beloved, this uprightness that we talk about in the yoga tradition, the spine and all that the spine has. If you could thread together, maybe even using the koshas as a design for your answer, what are those treasures that or stones that you continue to turn over in your hand as an object of remembrance? How do you help yourself remember? Is it through the service to the others, the way you spoke at the beginning, that you had no idea really that you would be involved with so many? And I'm curious about that part, since you have such a personal relationship with the universe. Yet now there's this wider influence that Soul of Yoga has and the way in which you do your business has. Can you walk us through that wilderness, through that park, a little bit more explicitly? From a leadership perspective, using the yogic. And it could be even what's pulling you forward.
Ah, okay. what is pulling me forward right now? This time in the world, as I said before, I'm going to back it up a little bit, I've been just sort of doing the next thing that the universe puts in front of me. I tune in, the universe says this, and I do it. And I think I have a very good set of organizational skills, and so the universe has me use my organizational skills to do what it wants me to do, and I do it. And I could see the benefit that people were getting from training. And I can see as they hand in their case studies, the people that they're helping. And it's beautiful. And I know how if you help someone in a family, it helps everyone else in the family. And then it helps their friends. And that idea of the points of light going out into the world. What is becoming clear to me now as a leadership perspective is that health is, as we know as yogis, health is not being symptom free, right? So health is not, I have this issue, I take a pill, now I'm healthy, right? Health is a balance of all the koshas, of the body being strong and the mind being clear and the heart being open, right? And being able to connect to a higher power if we're gonna move in through the kosha model. Yoga therapy allows people in such a unique way. I mean, there really isn't another modality, another intervention that helps people to work through all the different aspects, right? It works on the body, obviously. It's probably the most popular method is asana. But there's also the mental, emotional, as you know, being a life force yoga trainer and practitioner. And it teaches us that it's one of the first things we learn, I think, inherently, is how to stay with something difficult, right? And at first it comes from staying in a hard pose that you're thinking, your mind's going, why am I staying in this pose? I hate this pose. But we learn to stay with those things that are challenging. In a way, I have a teacher, Richard Miller, who says that being able to stay with a difficult emotion without numbing it or dumping it out on somebody else is the highest spiritual practice. And I think that yoga helps us do that, which makes the world a better place, right? If we're not numbing it and making ourselves sick with drugs, with alcohol, with cigarettes, with too much food, if we're not pointing our fingers at everyone else and making everyone else wrong, and we're making ourselves better people, that's how the world is going to emerge from this. Healthier body, mind, and spirit. And I hope, my hope for the world right now is that people will emerge from their fear with a different understanding of what it means to be healthy. That being healthy has so much value on all levels because it's going to keep you from getting sick. I mean, it's sort of a simple concept, but I don't think it's been really widespread, that idea of what real health is. And I see that as, if there's a keystone moment in my life and why it's important to do what I do, even when I'm exhausted and want to leave, it's this. It's that I think that yoga therapy is going to help people cross this bridge into a new way of being healthy. And that new way of being healthy is also about being more open in their hearts and minds to everybody else, and understanding, which is the key piece of yoga, that we're all connected. We're connected to each other and we are connected to the earth. And you can't help but know that once you start practicing yoga. And that's how, I mean, that little thing. But I think that that's what gets me up and working every day during this, is that it's so important right now. It just couldn't be more important to help people in that way.
So I'm watching you lean in and realize very, very strongly that as you move together with the energy that informs your actions, right? As you partner up with the energy that's informing your actions as a part of your practice and as a part of your commitment. This next question, and we're coming down the pike here, Mo, toward the ending, and you already spoke into the new, right? This, what was pulling you forward, this new framing of what it means to truly be healthy from this more expanded perception of being human on the earth with other humans also living on the earth. I'm wondering, is there a way in which that reach through your language just now, that reach, that the post-crisis reach through all of this, to thread from a leadership perspective, since we know this is not the first time we'll be going through something similar on the planet, right? This is the wisdom that we've known forever and ever as guests here. How might you, from the perspective of the future and from that deepest heart's desire, begin to project through what will have been learned? Besides that, there's this new articulation of health. what might people need to let go of? What do they need to do more of? Just this balancing act that you were talking about, so that those two pieces, the one that you have a little more ease with and the one that was a little bit more challenging. So I'm wanting to call out the voice of the sacred in you that's beginning to really stand up, so that others can hear it. If it's helpful for you to imagine 10 years out, 20 years out, to try that practice on, so that these little snippets of wisdom will have branched out a little bit more. And we don't need to fully go there. I'm just giving it a try.
I'm sorry. Can you hear Steve in the background?
I can see him, but I can't hear him. You can hear him, it sounds like.
Okay, all right, good. Well, you can. That's good. I think that this is, everything has balance, right? Yoga teaches us that nothing can ever really be truly out of balance, that the universe seeks this idea of brahmacharya, and the way I see brahmacharya is a devotion to life, right? Brahma and charya. And I think right now that this whole fear of death is really teaching us a devotion to life. And yoga is a devotion to life, right? It's a devotion to being present to everything in one's heart, to following the gifts of your own mind, right? The mind is not an enemy. It's an amazing thing that we can utilize in alignment with the universe. It's a creative force. To see where we have been using things to define ourselves rather than defining ourselves by the beauty of who we are. And I think that to me, if there were some gift coming in the future that I could be a part of helping people understand, it would be that all of these things that we thought we needed, right? You know, the cars that we're not even driving right now, and the all the clothes that we aren't even wearing right now, and, you know, all of the things that we thought we had to have don't matter. They really don't. They're fun, but it's not who we are. And to know who we are. And if I can be a part of that, then mission accomplished.
So let's just rest in silence and let any further images or senses, wisdom, poetry just begin to emerge, if anything else. This book is about cultivating the field of the future, these practices of awareness land us into this place of potential that, just like you so beautifully described, shift our understanding of what is matter, what matters, the stuff, the things. And so the ways in which we each experience that quality of beauty that's in us begins to be shared more explicitly. And so just listening inside one more minute as you look around your environment, and I can see little ones inside your space there, or it looks like there's a little one. Or is that? Oh, it's Steve's hand.
It's Steve's hand. So I did have one more thought that I wanted to share.
Good.
And this idea of what matters. That this is a time of, for many people, maybe not, I know there are some people that are quite happy in seclusion and they're introverts and, you know, they haven't lost their job and they haven't lost a business and, you know, there are people that feel pretty good right now. But for all of the people who are struggling, including the yoga studios, right? To look at this time and remember, and it's hard, but to remember that the universe is inherently imbalanced, right? There's always day that follows night, night that follows day, always spring, you know, always birth, always death. That as some things die away, to recognize that the things that we thought define who we were aren't defining who we are because we're still here and they're gone, right? So what does define us? Who are we? You know, to really, to use the tools of yoga to feel into who are you without any of those trappings of personality, of ego. You know, we are one. We are one. And I hope that that's what can arise from all of this difficulty and pain and fear. Because if it's true that, you know, every shadow has the equal amount of light, then we've got a whole lot of light coming towards us eventually, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is the big walk through the darkness for many, isn't it? And thank you so much for the wonderful way in which you weave together not only your personal experience, but also a certain very tangible hope for others to hold on to as well, Mo. These are not easy times when there's so much uncertainty landing in our bodies and minds, to even dare to string things together with an expectation that we will learn something as a shared humanity. But I'm hearing that in what you have to offer. And let me just sit for a sec to see if there's anything else, or if you have anything else. Yeah, here it is. Maybe, again, from the body, as you began your early training, this following of the friend, the saying yes to the friend, I'm hearing you actually have created friendships with all these other friends, the soul friends of the teachings of the yogic tradition. And I'd just like to invite that part of you in the end of this interview to maybe offer a little welcoming prayer to the other wisdom traditions who are also waking up on the planet in other places than yoga studios, in the Muslim communities, in the Sufi communities, in the African diaspora, down in South America, China, Asia. It feels like you have a capacity from that place of ground where you are to do a little reaching out as a co-initiation to the others who, like you, who we don't even know yet, are doing similar things. Let's see what shows up.
Yoga is just one lens that we use to sort the wisdom in a way that humans can understand it. And then there are all these other lenses that sort the wisdom into a way that other people can understand it. As you said, the Sufis, the Buddhists, the mystics of all kinds. And we're all saying the same thing. And we all know, that their knowledge is our knowledge and our knowledge is their knowledge, and that we're all one. So I don't see any difference except for terminology and labels, and it's, Yeah, I don't know how to say that. I wish there was like this beautiful, eloquent statement for it. It's we're all one. And I think that we know that. The more mystical a set of lenses becomes or a story becomes, the more we just all lead back to that center, right? Going back to the koshas, the Anandamaya kosha, right? We all meet in that center of joy that comes from being together at the real part of us, as you said, the part that matters.
Well, I'm glad that we shared a little part that matters today.
Me Thank too. You so much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Sally.
Yeah, so delightful to have this conversation. And I don't have to do anything with it until September. So if there's anything that you need from me, otherwise there'll just be a few more communications.
Okay, thank you.
Okie doke. Be well.
Bye.
Take good care.
Bye.